is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Stan Johnson, head men's basketball coach at Loyola Marymount University, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Hey, Hoopheads, we all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com, spelled A-R-Y-S-E, and use the code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off the future of performance. That's A-R-Y-S-E.com with promo code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off.
When I got the head job at Highland, those guys that played for me as freshmen won the league as seniors. So that was a really fun group to be able to coach all the way through their high school career.
Adam Sestaro is the head boys varsity basketball coach at Highland High School in the state of Ohio, taking over the Hornets program in June of 2015. Sestaro previously spent a total of 7 years in the Highland program at various levels. Adam started his coaching career as both a varsity assistant and junior varsity coach at Highland before taking a job on TK Griffith's boys basketball staff at Archbishop Hoban in Akron, Ohio. Adam's a 1998 graduate of Akron St. Vincent St. Mary, who gained experience early in his career as a student manager at the University of Akron, working for Coach Dan Hipsher. Don't miss our free Hoopheads Pod webinar series on Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern. If you miss a live webinar, you can buy lifetime access to any of our previous webinars for $4.99 on the Hoopheads Pod website. If you're focused on improving your coaching and your team, we've got you covered. Visit hoopheadspod.com/webinars to get registered. Make sure you check out our new Hoopheads Pod network of shows, including Thrive with Trevor Huffman, Beyond the Ball, the CoachMaze.com podcast, Players Court, Bleachers and Boards, and our team-focused NBA podcasts, Cavalier Central, Grizz and Grind, Knuck a Few Buck, The 305 Culture, and Blazing the Path. We're looking for more NBA podcasters interested in hosting their own show centered on a particular team. Shoot an email to info@hoopheadspod.com if you're interested in learning more and bringing your talent to our network. Be prepared with a pen and paper as you listen to this episode with Adam Sestaro, boys varsity basketball coach at Highland High School in Medina, Ohio. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome to the podcast from Highland High School here in the state of Ohio, Adam Sestaro. Adam, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Oh, pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
We are excited to have you on, get a chance to dig into all the things that you've been able to do in the game of basketball. I want to start by going back in time to when you were a kid. Talk to us a little bit about your first experiences with the game and what made you fall in love with it when you were younger.
Yeah, when I might have a fairly unique, I guess, background in hoops for a coach. I did not have a lot of athletes in my family. My parents, my mom and dad were not never really played organized sports. I think my mom might have played one season of CYO volleyball in middle school or something. You know, my buddies did. So I'm from Barberton, Ohio originally. And I started out as a baseball player. Both my grandpas really liked baseball. So I did that a lot. And then my first experience was with hoops was My buddy's dad, Ernie Panko, who was a Barberton police officer, was going to coach our CYO team in sixth grade. That was the first year we had basketball at St. Augustine. And I remember he came up to me and asked me, hey, you know, Adam, are you gonna play basketball this year? And I thought to myself, I'll never forget this. I thought to myself, well, I'm tall. I'm good at basketball. Yeah, of course I'm going to play. And I was terrible, but I got to play with all my buddies. In sixth grade. And by the time, you know, seventh and eighth grade rolled around, we were pretty good. And, you know, yeah, the beginning of my basketball career was, you know, playing with all my buddies, that I went to grade school with. We had two teams. We had like 25 boys in our class, and like 22 or 23 of them played basketball. So we had, you know, we had two teams, an A team and a B team. And I think by the time we were in eighth grade, our team, the A team, won the championship, and the B team played in the championship game. So, you know, we in Barberton, we liked hoops a lot. I liked playing with my buddies. I always said that, you know, I was pretty good and willing passer, because when you grow up playing with your friends, you know, you pass the ball to them. So,
so true. Well, for people who are not from the state of Ohio, the city of Barberton has a long and storied history in Ohio high school basketball. So what was it like growing up there in terms of the basketball that you were able to see or heard about as a young kid?
Yeah, it was, I mean, I remember a kid that went to our grade school that was, we had like a buddy, like a big brother kind of program. And when I was, you know, like third or fourth grade, Terry Allen was my buddy. And then he went on to be a really good player at Barberton. So, you know, one of my friend's parents took us to see him play for the Magics, and played in old Grenell's gymnasium with, you know, the band up in the balcony on the one end. And then, yeah, by the time I was in, you know, seventh or eighth grade, we would go to Tusk Park and play pickup games, like, you know, whenever the weather was nice. We were down there. And I tell you what, I probably learned a lot in life, a lot of the lessons that have gotten me through playing pickup basketball. You know, you learn how to negotiate, you learn how to stand up for yourself, you know, you take some pride in your game, and you know, you learn how to work through being called names, and you know, and you either figure out you get pretty good or no one lets you play.
I feel like that's been a running theme throughout our podcast since it started right from the very beginning, is just the demise of pickup basketball and how that's impacted the way kids grow up in the game. And I'm like you, and I grew up playing on the playground and driving all over the city trying to find good games. And as you said, I learned a lot of life lessons, not just basketball, but just how to interact with people, all different kinds of people, different ages, different races.
Yeah.
People who had different kinds of personalities, just to put it kindly. And I feel like that stuff is still things that there's still things that I carry with me that I learned on the playground. That goes nothing with the impact that it had on me as a basketball player. And I always say there's a tremendous amount of value in the system that we have today for youth basketball, in that I think kids are exposed in a lot of cases to better coaching, at least from a technical standpoint, than kids maybe of my generation or your generation would have been exposed to. And yet I still think that there's something missed when kids only play in a gym with parents, with officials, against kids their own age, and they never get to learn those things that you were talking about, negotiation and standing up for yourself and how to play against somebody who outweighs you by 100 pounds and trying to figure out how this guy who's, you know, 38 years old and still can reach around and tap the ball away from you from behind, and all these little tricks that, you know, another eighth grader doesn't have those same tricks in their bag that a 26-year-old playground player has. And I think kids today miss out on that. And I feel bad for them, just in a sense. It sounds like you had a similar experience, that a lot of my most fond memories of the game of basketball aren't even necessarily from the organized basketball that I played. But I think back to those playground days as ones that I really miss and wish that today's kids could have the same opportunity to experience.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, I think kids today are probably more skilled and, you know, kind of work on their game more and get, like you said, get a little better coaching and instruction. But just the competitiveness of playing at the playground and playing pickup games. And if you lose, you might have to sit for an hour or something. Yeah, there is something to that. And all the other life lessons that you pick up while you're out there.
Yeah, no question about that. So as you go along and you think about growing up in Barberton and playing multiple sports. When you got into high school, just tell me a little bit about what you did from a high school athletic standpoint, and then how you think playing those multiple sports when you were younger impacted you as just an athlete.
I didn't know what I was. Was I a basketball player or a baseball player? In baseball season, I was a baseball player and I loved that. And I thought that was the best. And during hoop season, I was a hooper and I thought, basketball was the best. So for me, it gave me some variety, something to look forward to. Two games that I really love. I coached high school baseball one season and I loved it. It was great. I coached the freshmen at Walsh, and Walsh baseball is incredible. Coach Kazmar over there. So we were 18-1 or something, but it was just too dang cold. And I said,
get back in the gym, right?
Back in the gym. Yeah. I froze my butt off coaching those April games. So, that was my last, but, I coached my son's T-ball team here, in the fall. So this is my first experience going back, but yeah, I love baseball too. And, grew up, watching the Indians with my grandpa and, listen to it on the radio and, just a big part of, the experience of, kind of maturing from a kid into a young, adult.
Absolutely. I'm going to give you some advice on the youth baseball front, okay? When you get to the season where it's coach pitch, only be a parent that season. Don't be the coach.
Yeah, I did that. we were supposed to be T-ball and it turned into coach pitch. So I got fairly good at hitting bats by the second or third game.
That was the worst though, striking out kids. You just, I felt so terrible the year that I had to do that. And you just were up there like you said, aiming it at their bat. That was the year that I was like, I would do camp in the summer. And that was at the time when I was still at Strongsville High School I guess it's a new old gym, but didn't have air conditioning. So I was in this sweat box all day for like 6 or 7 hours. It's 95 degrees in there. And then I would leave there, come home, grab something to eat, and then go stand out on a sweaty, dusty baseball diamond and try to pitch to 6-year olds. Those are some long days.
Mike has secretly enjoyed striking those six-year-olds out. I think secretly Mike enjoyed it.
I couldn't strike them out probably when I was six. So I guess I had to get my satisfaction from being an adult. So
there you go.
Yeah, understood. So, all right. So you get into high school and you're looking around. What do you remember about your high school career? Give me a one or two high school basketball memories that stand out for you. Just things when you think back. You're like, wow, that's really what my high school experience was all about.
Yeah, so I went to St. Vincent St. Mary in high school. I was a few years ahead of another pretty good player that you guys might have heard of that's going to win his fourth NBA championship here in a couple of days, LeBron James. So I missed him by a couple years. But when I was a freshman at St. V, they were coming off a 3-17 season, and our coach reminded us of that all the time. We had a new coach, Mitch Garish, took over my freshman year, and I was okay. I played some JV as a freshman, but by the time I was a senior, we won the district. We played in the regional, and it was kind of part of the kind of getting back to St. V basketball being pretty good. So I always kind of took a lot of pride in that. And I got to play with some really, really good players. So John King was like the number one freshman in the state. He was the grade behind me when he came in. And then Derek and Darren Tarver. Derek went on to lead the MAC in scoring and then be a pro for 11 seasons. And just a dude that could, rolls into the gym and scores 25 points. And his twin brother, Darren, who played at George Mason but had a heart condition and then couldn't keep going with his college career. And then Maverick Carter was a sophomore when I was a senior, too. So LeBron's business manager was also a pretty good hooper and wound up, I think, being D3 player of the year by the time he was a senior. So I got to play with some really good players. I was a role player. that, you know, just tried to pass the ball to guys that could score and, you know, screen and rebound. And I fell down a lot on defense. I called it taking charges, but, you know, I couldn't block shots. So I just tried to fall down a lot and get charges. And, yeah, so it was, you know, those weeks we had Buchtel, on the ropes my junior year. And just couldn't quite put them away. They played in the state Final Four. And then my senior year, I really thought we had a chance to go to Columbus. And we kind of got upset in the regional by Cardinal Mooney. And we would have played Hoban in the regional championship, which would have been a pretty epic battle. And they went to the Final Four that year. TK took them to the Final Four that year, and we missed out. So he never lets me forget that.
And you never will, trust me.
No,
those things stick with you, those losses and missed opportunities. You, I think as a player, your career is so fleeting that those things go away. And sometimes as a coach, not that they're any easier to take as a coach, but you know, as a coach, you have a long career to be able to try to at least make up for that in some way. And as a player, and I think that that's the same way looking at our current situation with the, you know, COVID-19 and the pandemic and all this. And you know, I've had a bunch of conversations with people just how bad it is for kids who you only get 4 years of playing whatever your high school sport is, and to lose one or have one compromised, or I can't even imagine being a spring sport athlete last year and working your entire high school career to get to your senior year and then it just disappears and you don't even get to play.
Yeah,
that's got to be tremendously, tremendously disappointing. And I think that sometimes we often think that, oh, we'll get another opportunity. And I think it's a good lesson for everybody that you don't, those opportunities don't always come. And when you don't take advantage of them, they live with you for the rest of your life.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, yeah, you're right. This COVID experience has been a good lesson, and just, you know, enjoy every single game, enjoy every single practice, and remember, you know, that basketball or baseball or whatever sport you play is, you know, you play it because it's fun, and you play it because you love it. So just, you know, love it and enjoy it while you're out there.
So you move on from St. V and you end up at the University of Akron, and you have kind of a unique basketball experience there. So talk to us a little bit about how you got involved with Akron basketball and what your experiences were as a part of the Akron Zips.
Yeah, it was funny. I was thinking of this kind of on my drive in and thinking about talking to you tonight. I had one conversation with my mom about playing D3 basketball. I said, "Mom, you know, I think I'd like to try to play D3 basketball." No one was recruiting me or anything, but you know, I think I'd like to try to reach out to some coaches and play. And she said one sentence to me. She said, "How are you going to pay for that?" And I,
the and dream I, is dead, Adam.
Yeah, and I said, "Oh, that's a great question. I never thought of that." And then, you know, I found out how much it costs to go to some of those D3 schools, and I was happy to go to the University of Akron. And you know, I just went into the basketball office and said, "Hey, do you guys need a manager?" And you know, I of course had visions of, you know, that manager that gets in on, you know, in that game on ESPN and the crowd's going crazy, you know, like, oh, the former manager turned walk on, you know, makes a shot at the end of a blowout or something, which never materialized. And I kind of realized that the first practice I went to, but yeah, no, I guess.
So when you went into it, I don't mean to interrupt, but I'm just curious, because this is something that always, I guess, I didn't think about it when I was playing. And now that I've talked to so many coaches, it makes a lot more sense to me. But it sounds like you went in to become a manager, not with the idea that you wanted to get into coaching, but more with the idea that you could still be around the game with a dream in the back of your head that maybe someday as a player I could actually check into a game. Is that kind of where your head was at that time?
Yeah, no, I mean, it was both. I knew okay. I knew deep down that I wanted to coach and probably be a high school teacher. My high school coaches were great. Like I said, Mitch Garish and Rob Sloan, who's now an administrator at Cuyahoga Falls. Those guys were like, they were young. They loved hoops. They were sarcastic. I had them as teachers, and I really looked up to them, and I was like, man, these guys have fun every day. This is something I could do for a job. So my mom was a middle school math teacher. recently retired. She didn't want me to be a teacher. She thought I should, you know, I said my major was going to be, you know, marketing or something, business, but I knew I wanted to be, you know, coach basketball. So yeah, I wanted to play. I mean, we all want to play. That's the best. And they let me play in practice, and I'd show up at open gym with my shoes, and, you know, I play in open gym sometimes and stuff. And like I said, when they needed a guy in practice, I'd jump in. But yeah, I just wanted to be around the game, you know, since sixth grade, I've been part of my school's basketball team. So I just, you know, I just showed up at the office and, you know, say, hey, what can I hang around? And I didn't get paid for like the first, I don't know, 6 weeks or something. It was like, you know, they wanted to see if I was really into it. And I just kept showing up. And then, you know, they called me in and said, hey, you know, guess what? We'll pay you for doing this. So, yeah, I got a paid, you know, paid position, and got to have some really, you know, awesome experiences. And they let me sit in the first seat on the bench and you know, be around Division I basketball. So I'm always thankful to Coach Hip and Coach Bugatti and those guys for having me.
So tell people a little bit about what you actually did day to day. So what were some of the tasks that you did to help them out? What was your experience like while you were there? First, let's go with the task question. Then secondly, we can maybe talk a little bit about just how you felt accepted by the coaching staff, and then what your relationship was like with the players too.
Yeah, I did everything. For a while, I was our only manager. There was one other guy when I started out, and, you know, he got a job or something, or they kind of moved on. And then I did it for myself for like a season and a half. And then, you know, I got a couple guys to help me out. But so, yeah, I mean, you know, I washed the practice uniforms. I sent out letters to recruits. You know, I was in the office doing stuff. On the road trips, I would like get everybody's food order. They just put me in charge of like, hey, you know, order something from, you know, whatever. And, you know, here's some cash to pay for it. So they gave me a ton of responsibilities. I got to go to Europe for like 2.5 weeks after my freshman year. It was like the second time ever I'd been on an airplane. And we spent 2 weeks, and we went to Malta, and we went to France, and we went to Italy. And, it was great. We lost Jamal Ball at the airport.
How did that happen?
That was another one of my jobs, making sure everybody got on the bus. So, if you guys remember, Jamal was a really great point guard at Akron. He's from Canton. And I'm like, you know, 19 years old or 18 years old, and we're in Europe, and we've been traveling all day. And I don't know, Jamal got on the bus, and then he got off the bus to use the restroom. And I didn't notice. And, you know, we drove like an hour to the hotel. And this is before cell phones and stuff. So this would have been like 1999. Somehow Jamal had his itinerary and, you know, took a cab and met us at the hotel. But the coaching staff was none too happy with me. But it was a fun trip, and they forgot about it pretty quick. So no one was worse.
You still had a job. You still had a job when you returned stateside.
Yeah, they didn't send me home or anything. So I got to hang out for the rest of the trip. So that was good.
Nice. So when you think back to that time, and obviously you get sort of a behind the scenes look at what coaching at the Division I college level is like, what do you remember about that in terms of things that you saw or things that you learned that you didn't really necessarily understand were part of coaching going into that experience? Because I think when you're a player, you don't necessarily see all the things that go on behind the scenes. You're like, oh, my coach just shows up for practice for 3 hours and then they go home. I have no idea what else they're doing around the time. And clearly you just mentioned some of the things, from washing uniforms to doing itineraries and all that. But just maybe from a perspective of somebody who's brand new to seeing that, what did you notice about coaching that surprised you during that time?
It was that old saying, like, you don't know what you don't know. Like, you know, first of all, like the X's and O's. Like in high school, we ran five out and we passed and cut and we played man defense and we switched everything. And I was like, I know about basketball. Like, you just switch everything when teams screen and you just pass and cut and that'll get you open. And then, you know, I go to Akron practice, and Coach Hip was a Bob Knight guy. So it was all motion offense, cutters and screeners, and it was all, you know, man defense. And, we had four or five different ball screen coverages and, chasing shooters and getting third man through. And I was like, whoa, I have no clue about this game. And I'm glad I'm here and I can learn. So from the X's and O's standpoint, and then, yeah, from the, from the coaching standpoint of just, what goes into a scouting report, watching film, players' tendencies, all that stuff. It was just such a great lesson on, a deep study into the game.
So were you able to sit in on a lot of the coaches' meetings, like planning practice and going over scouting reports? You were in on a lot of that stuff?
Yeah, I would be in with the team. I would be in with the team when we would go over the scouting report every time. In the office, I would kind of sneak into the film room with like one of the assistants. We had like a closet with VHS tapes and a bunch of VCRs stacked on top of each other. That was like the film room. So I would sneak in there and watch film with some of the assistants sometimes. I Coach Hip's office was kind of like the big office. So I didn't venture in there, too much. he kept it pretty locked down. You didn't, bother Coach Hip too much during the season. I got to see it all. And, we had a really cool thing where, my junior year, Pat Knight was our assistant. It was the year, Bob Knight left Indiana and before he went on to Texas Tech. So Bob Knight showed up at, three or four of our practices that year. And, I would try to sit next to Pat on the plane and like get old Indiana stories and stuff. I'm sure he got super annoyed by me, but,
All right. So what was the best story he told you? There's got to be something.
Okay, so the best Bob Knight story was he shows up to practice for the first time and there's another manager named Jeremy, and Jeremy's like a huge Bob Knight fan. So he asked Pat. He said, "Hey, after practice, can I go meet your dad in the office?" And he's like, "Absolutely." So Jeremy's a college kid and he's got a little beard that he's trying to grow and it's not working out well. So anyway, he goes and goes down to the office after practice and Pat says, "Dad, this is Jeremy, he's our manager, a big fan, he'd like to meet you." And the first thing Bob Knight says to him, he looks at him, he goes, "Jeremy, your face looks like a chicken's ass missing some of the feathers." And he goes, "When I come back here tomorrow, I want to see that shaved off your face." And so Jeremy, I wasn't in there. So Jeremy comes down to the locker room and like tells me the story. And he goes, I'm a grown man. I'm a grown man. And, I'll wear a beard if I want to. But doggone it, if Bob Knight tells me to shave, I'm going to shave. So the next day,
that's funny.
The next day he was clean shaven. And actually, Coach Knight stopped practice. He stops practice right in the middle. He just walks out on the court. "Hey, Dan, let me say something to the team." And he's talking to the team. And like halfway through his talk, he goes, "And where's Jeremy at? Where's Jeremy at?" And he tells the whole team, what he told Jeremy about his face. And he says, "Look at his face today. Look how great he looks." So the whole team was, dying laughing. But that was the best. That's the best Zips and Coach Knight story.
That's good stuff. That is very good stuff. It's funny because, you think about Bob Knight and just clearly his style of coaching, and then we think about the way that coaching has trended today, sort of away from that style. And you just hear that story and you're like, man, I don't even know if somebody could get away with saying that even at the college level today. You just hear about things that go on and come out about different coaches, and clearly we're in a different we're in a different era without a question. But that's just, I remember when I was at Kent, we played at Indiana, and the thing that I remember the most about Bob Knight is that I was just really surprised by how big he was.
Yeah.
And he was just he just had a very intimidating presence, because obviously you grow up watching him on TV and seeing him. And I just remember when I saw him in person that he was much bigger than I would have thought from seeing him on TV. And he was just as intimidating as you would have imagined watching him on TV. And reading the books and hearing the stories about him.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I was always nervous to try to, you know, go talk to him or do anything, you know, that would catch his eye when he was around. So yeah, he's an intimidating figure for sure.
You never knew what you were getting, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Probably better to be the manager that's kind of off on the side as opposed to one of his best players if you want to avoid the brunt of, let's just kindly call it, his criticism.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Lay low, lay low.
All right, so you're clearly getting a look at what it's like to coach college basketball. So even though maybe your initial thought was, I want to be a teacher and a high school basketball coach, did you ever think about staying with the college game? And I'm sure, based on the relationship that you had with the staff there at Akron, that they probably would have been willing to vouch for you and talk to people that they knew and use their connections to help you get a job. So just curious as to what your decision-making process was when you got finished in terms of where you wanted to go with your career.
Yeah, I always, that's one of the things I always regret. I wish I would have, you know, pursued the college game a little bit when I was young. The manager before me had gotten a grad assistant position because of the, you know, his connections with the coaches at Akron. And for whatever reason, because, you know, I was 22 and not very smart, I kind of got it in my head that because I didn't play in college, that I couldn't really be a college coach, that the players wouldn't respect me. And also, I kind of saw the world of recruiting and it kind of cutthroat and the way that, you know, college coaches sort of took it personal with players, and which, you know, they've got a paycheck on the line, you know, and guys aren't performing and guys aren't producing and you've recruited them, you know, it becomes a weird dynamic. And I just thought that didn't really fit my personality. Like I said, I wish I would have tried it. I wish I would have just pursued it and you know, hopped around schools and just gave it a shot. You know, no regrets. I got a teaching job right away at Highland where I did my student teaching, and it's worked out pretty darn well for me. So
it's definitely, I think, when you start looking at the difference in the lifestyles between a high school and a college coach, although I'm sure you can attest to the fact that those lines maybe have blurred a little bit in terms of the time commitment that it takes to be a high school coach probably now compared to where you started. But still, clearly, when you're a college coach, there's a lot of late nights. There's a lot of nights recruiting on the road and being away from your family. Not that you don't have those same things when you're as a high school coach, but you know, the lifestyle of a college coach, I always say that we've talked to a bunch of people on the podcast that have the story of, you know, I was a graduate assistant, I was making $1,000 a year, or I was making nothing. I was living with four other guys in someone's basement in two rooms, and I was there for 2 years, and then I had to move halfway across the country to somewhere I had never been before. And now I was, you know, I got promoted and I was making $5,000 a year. And you just hear these stories of, it's not something where very often you become an overnight sensation as a college basketball coach. Most people in that business, it takes you a long, long time to work your way up the ladder. And in many cases, people never get to the glamour jobs that, you know, we all think of. There just aren't that many of them. The guys who are making millions of dollars at the top of the food chain, there just isn't very many of those. And so I think, you know, you look at what your lifestyle can be as a high school coach and a high school teacher, and again, I don't know that one is better than the other. There's obviously pluses and minuses to both of them. But I think from a lifestyle standpoint, especially as you get a little bit older and you want to have a family, you get married, you have kids, I think to me, the college basketball lifestyle would be a challenging one for sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, there's not a lot of money in it unless you somehow get to the Division I level. And even then, you've got to be one of the top assistants. And it's a rough go, and it's a long road, and it's guys certainly aren't in it, you know, for the cash. I mean, at least not early on.
So what did your first experience look like when you got your job at Highland? What's your first coaching experience look like? What do you remember about standing in front of the kids for the first time? No longer is your title manager, but now your title is coach. What did that feel like? What do you remember about those first moments with your first team?
So my first team that I actually coached was so during my senior year of college, I was done being a manager. Some of my friends on the team, I made some good friends with the players and stuff. Had kind of moved on, and so I decided, you know, if I'm going to teach, I'd better, you know, kind of figure this out. So I got a job at like Sylvan Learning Center, so I could, you know, get some experience teaching kids. And then I coached my cousin's seventh grade CYO team, and I went from, you know, a Division One gym with Coach Hipscher to you know, six guys on a seventh grade CYO team, and you know, I was probably terrible. I know I was. You know, I was just not nearly understanding enough with them. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I tried to play man-to-man defense and it didn't work out. So I just quickly reverted to the old 2-3 zone like everybody else in CYO. And yeah, I think we were down to five players by the end of the year. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was good for me to kind of figure out how to be a coach. And I tell my cousin John all the time. He's, you know, 30 some years old now, and he's not a professional basketball player. He is a great construction manager. So we didn't have many great basketball players, but we had some really good kids. But it was a good experience for me to realize seventh graders are a little different than D1 college players.
What do you think you were good at out of the gate? Because obviously there were things that you look at and you say, oh man, I didn't really know what I was doing there. But what's something that you felt like as a coach came naturally to you in that beginning, those beginning experiences?
No, I mean, I thought I always had a pretty good idea of, you know, how hard you needed to play to be good, of, you know, how to, you know, scheme and stop the other team. And eventually, after, you know, a couple of seasons and some self-reflection, I feel like I'm pretty good at relating to players. You know, I was never a great high school player or anything. So, you know, I feel like I can kind of relate. I relate pretty well. And I did that early on to guys, and a passion to, you know, kind of help guys get better and, you know, figure out their role and, you know, what they're going to need to be successful as a high school player.
All right. So over the course of your career, you've filled almost every position at the high school level. So you've been a freshman coach, you've been a JV coach, you've been a varsity assistant, you've been a varsity head coach. Maybe walk us through some of the things you've learned at each one of those different levels that have helped prepare you for becoming a head coach, and then that have sort of led you into some of the things that you believe you need to have as a head coach in order to have success.
Yeah, I tried to pick up stuff and learn along the way. So at least I could recognize that I had a lot to learn early on. So I started out as a varsity assistant. My first couple seasons, I was at Woodridge 1 year with Chris Kessner, who I student taught with. And then when I got hired at Highland, I was a varsity assistant for Chris Capanola. And, you know, we won the league our first year. And I'm like, oh, this is easy. but no, when I was a varsity assistant, I tried to do whatever the head coach did. I always, you know, knew I wanted to be a head coach. So, you know, whatever it was, game planning, scouting report, you know, I tried to split games with the head coach. Hey, let me, you know, have the scout for whatever games, you know, let's split them or what games can I have? I showed up to every summer league, every open gym, every workout, just like the head coach did. You know, then I spent, like five seasons as a JV coach, which I wanted to, you know, get the in-game experience of, you know, subbing guys and calling sets and making defensive adjustments and giving halftime talks and all that stuff. So I tried to improve that game management part of it when I coached JV. And then I actually, so the head coach at Highland got fired. And I thought it was maybe time to step away from there. And then I went and I was the varsity assistant for TK Griffith at Hoban, and same thing. So I went back to being a varsity assistant, and I was just you know, bound and determined to be there and do whatever the head coach did. Even probably to a detriment, I think I might have missed like a meeting with a caterer or something when my wife and I were planning our wedding to go to a summer league
game. How dare you, Adam?
And yeah, she'll remind me of that every so often. But she would say stuff like, "Do you know? Do you really need to be there?" And I would say, like, "Well, you know, where do I draw that line? Like, I'm just going to be at everything. You know, I'm never gonna ask like anything is, you know, they don't need me there." So yeah, that was always kind of my approach. And then, I got the opportunity to come back to Highland and coach the freshmen. And, you know, that was, we played triple headers now, but that was kind of like the last year we played on Thursdays. And so I had a lot of autonomy, and I ran the freshman team, kind of like I would run a varsity program. I mean, we had film sessions, we had scouting reports, when we could do them. And I just coached those guys like it was a varsity team, and said, coaching freshmen is fine with me. I kind of have my own team, and kind of can do things my own way. And, let's just make this, you know, like a mini, varsity program here. And, we practiced in the back gym, and we called it the torture chamber. And, we played games back there, and, you know, we tried to make it tough on teams coming in there, and yeah, it was fun. And I actually, when I got the head job at Highland, those guys that played for me as freshmen won the league as seniors. So that was kind of a really fun group to kind of be able to coach all the way through their high school career.
Yeah, that's very cool to be able to have that experience. We've talked to a couple different coaches that have sort of had that experience. We had a guy who he's the head coach at Fayetteville High School in Arkansas, Brad Stamps, and he started out like as the seventh grade coach and worked his way all the way up. And he had Ronnie Brewer, who ended up playing in the NBA, played at the University of Arkansas, but he started coaching Ronnie in seventh grade and then just worked his way up the staff and eventually was his coach all the way from seventh grade all the way through being a senior in high school. And so I can imagine with that case, or with your case where you're coaching kids for 4 years, that the bond that you were able to build with them, I'm sure, was really strong, and that had to be a lot of fun. I want to ask you, this will kind of start getting us into what you're doing with the program at Highland. So my first question is, as an assistant coach over the course of your career, what were some things that you picked up about what it takes to be a good assistant that now that you're a head coach, that when you start to look to build your own staff and look for guys you want to bring on as assistants, what are some of the key qualities or traits that you look for in somebody that you want to bring into your program, as whether it's a varsity assistant, a JV coach, a freshman? What kind of things are you looking for from your staff?
I want at least one guy on the staff who wants to be a head coach. I want a hungry young guy that's going to, do everything, show up to everything, be part of the, you know, help out with the travel tryouts and, come to all the open gyms and, do a bunch of four-man workouts. So I'm really lucky, and I have that right now. Jack Leslie, who I got to know through some AAU stuff, came aboard right away and has been our JV coach the whole time I've been the head coach at Highland, going into our sixth season now. So I always want at least one young, hungry guy. I've got Chris Kessner now as my varsity assistant. I had James Madison previously. He's now our girls head coach, but both those guys had head coaching experience. So I like to have a veteran guy who is, maybe ready to just kind of be in that assistance role and can just, have that, has been through the fire as a head coach and, offer that guidance and support. And then Chris Kessner too is a great, specialist kind of coach too. He was a good D3, 6'6", below the rim, big man, with really good footwork and, really good toughness. So he works with our post guys and some of that old school, stuff that maybe, some teams don't teach anymore, but,
you still have guys that go in the post? What are you doing? You're behind. You're totally behind the times.
Yeah, yeah. We don't. We coach who we get. So sometimes we have post players and no, but yeah, we would like to throw it inside and you know, get fouled and play inside out and so yeah, Coach Gessner does a great job. And then our freshman coach Bob Buchanan was a head coach at St. V and Revere back in the day, and he's a retired teacher, and you know, he's been our freshman coach the whole time, and he does a great job with the fundamentals and kind of teaching our freshmen how to compete and win at the freshman level. So I think I've got it really good on our staff, and those are, like I said, those are some of the things that I look for.
All right, how do you go about, what's your philosophy on putting together a K-12 program to make sure that ultimately you end up having success at the varsity level? Because we all know, especially at the public school level, you have to be involved with the youth program. You have to get those kids excited about being a part of your high school program as they grow up and aspire to want to be a part of it. So how do you try to go about aligning what's done from the youth level all the way up to the varsity in terms of, are your freshman and JV teams running the same things that the varsity is running? How deep does that go down into the lower grade levels? Are you using common terminology? Do you do clinics? Just how do you get everybody on the same page so that everybody's working to lead towards Highland varsity basketball having success?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things. There was a lot of, before I got the head job at Highland, there was a lot of coaching turnover. So one of the first things I had to do is kind of get everybody on the same page. And so, you know, I try to be real involved in our travel program. We do, so let's start at the beginning. We do first, second, and third graders on Saturday mornings during the season, and our players coach them. And we just try to make it really fun. We play 3-on-3 or 4-on-4 full court. We lower the hoops, and we want kids just to have a great experience and fall in love with basketball. And you know, we want to make it so the skill level isn't high, but the fun factor. When I say that, like, we want the hoops low. We want to use a smaller basketball. We want kids to have success. And we want it to be, you know, we want it to be fun and exciting. We want to play 3-on-3 or 4-on-4 so that it's a little easier to connect a pass, that it's, you know, it's easier to get a fast break. It's easier to, you know, find somebody for a layup. So we, we get our guys, you know, we kind of coach up our guys about to be real positive, make it a good experience for the kids at their, you know, kind of earliest experiences with basketball. So we do that. That's our philosophy with first and second, and we get some third graders in there. Third grade starts travel. So I try to work closely with, you know, the travel parents, the volunteer coaches. And we've recently set up, we haven't had a travel organization. So we have kind of put the finishing touches on a travel organization, where, you know, you're without getting too far into the weeds, you know, everybody pays into a common thing. All the uniforms come from the same place, because we never had that before. But yeah, I we do a little clinic with those coaches. I try to hand them like a coach's handbook that I give to all of them with some of the, you know, fundamentals and some of the things that we believe in with a games based approach. To basketball. So we have a handout we give them. I put some videos together of some of the basic stuff that we do. So, you know, by fifth and sixth grade, they start to incorporate, you know, some of all of them can do our man defensive principles. And then they start to do some of our ball screen offense stuff, like in fifth and sixth grade. And then, and our seventh and eighth grade coaches are right in line with what we do. We use a lot of the same terminology, run the same, you know, base offense and defense. They even, you know, run some of our kind of go-to staple sets that we've had. So that's the advantage that, you know, we have at a public school, is that we can get our kids playing together early and all on the same page and in the program, and hopefully falling in love with Highland basketball and staying in-house.
Absolutely. How excited are your varsity JV kids, your high school kids, to go down and work with those first, second, and third graders. Because I always say that that's something when I look back on my own experience as a high school player and as a youth player, that's one of the things that I loved about growing up in Strongsville at the time I did was when I was in fifth, sixth, seventh grade, I still remember every single one of those varsity players that coached me, even if they weren't high school stars. To me, they were, because they were my coaches. And then conversely, when I got up to the high school, I still remember and I'm connected to some of those kids that I coached. And it's amazing that whatever it's been now, 30 years later, 40 years later, that I still have friends and people that I talk to from those experiences. And it's one of those things that, just like we talked about earlier, that has kind of gone by the wayside, because now we have, in most cases, you have parent coaches. So I think it's awesome that you guys are involving your varsity kids, but how do they feel about it? Are they as excited as I am as a 50-year-old man to be coaching those kids? I know maybe sometimes I got to get up early and, you know, that kind of thing, but I would think that once they get there, just being involved with those younger kids, I would have to guess that most of them are excited about it.
Mike, yeah, that's exactly it. You know, sometimes they're not, you know, real chipper on a Saturday morning, especially maybe after a loss on a Friday night or a long road trip or something. But once the balls go up and they start coaching and the kids start going up and down, and, you know, and the kid that hasn't made a shot, you know, and a couple Saturdays makes a shot, you know, everybody gets real excited and they start cheering. So our guys really do a good job, and they make it super fun for the kids. And it's a great connection between our high school level kids and our you know, our first, second, third graders.
All right, so let's take it to the next group of people that you have to get buy-in from if you're going to be successful. How do you engage the parents of your players in the program? What are some things that you do to keep those parents engaged, to keep them excited about having their kids a part of the program? Just what do you do to communicate with them and make sure that they feel a part of it?
I think we do the, you know, similar stuff to that other schools do. You know, we have a, you know, preseason parents meeting, we have a postseason parents meeting. We have team dinners, that, you know, some of the parents will volunteer to put together. So like Thursday nights are like our team dinner night, and everybody will get together. We always do like a holiday one. Sometimes it'll be at somebody's house if someone has the, you know, capacity to host everybody. But what I really think it starts with is treating their son the right way. You know, now having kids of my own, I think my focus has been, you know, I just want to coach how I would want my kids to be coached. You know, so I'm, you know, it gave me a little bit of perspective, you know, when my son was born, you know, 5.5 years ago. And it's like, you know, just coach them how I would want my kids to be coached, treat them the right way. And then, you know, that usually, if they know you're treating their son right and you want the best for him and you want him to grow into a good young man, that is kind of the basis of it. And then all that other stuff is, you know, it's fun. It's fun to have a team meal and sit around and kind of chat with everybody and the parents that are there. And, you know, we do our preseason meeting and things like that. I think the core is how you treat the kids.
All right. So what does that look like when you think about becoming a parent? Because I do think that as both a teacher and as a coach, I think when you are single or when you're married and you don't have kids, I think you have kind of a different perspective. And when you have your own kids, that perspective starts to shift. So what are some things that maybe you think about differently now that you're a parent? And then what do you do to try to build the kind of trusting relationships with your players that you're talking about?
For me, it's a huge advantage being a teacher in the school. So, you know, I have the kids in class, some of them, you know, I see them in the hallway. So, you know, I try to engage with them and, you know, get them excited about hoops, talk basketball during the season. You know, we'll meet in my room first and just kind of get a gauge on everybody, see how everybody's day was. Just start building a relationship that way. Like I said, which is something I would want to see, for my kids' coach. You know, and then from there, you know, we like to, you know, try to give something I think I've gotten better at is like giving the kids a voice in the program, a choice in the program. letting them know that, you know, ultimately it's their team, it's their high school experience. So, you know, we try to give them like choices of what's going to be on the practice plan. And, you know, in open gym, we're having open gyms, and it's like, guys, you decide who, you know, what the teams are going to be, and decide what you're going to play to, and figure out the fouls. Don't go to me and say, you know, like, you guys be in charge of it. You know, it's going to be better if you're kind of running it. So I think it's stuff like that. Like I said, giving the kids ownership when they can, and just letting them know that, you know, they're an important part of the program, whether they're, you know, our star player and our leading scorer, or there are, you know, 11th or 12th guy that, you know, they're all important for what we do and for our success.
All right. So one of the things that you mentioned that I think is completely true, and yet I think we're starting to see probably less of it than we ever have, is being a teacher in the building and what an advantage that is. And so for me, when I was a varsity assistant coach earlier in my career, I taught in the elementary school, which at Richmond Heights, where I was coaching, was right across, literally right across the parking lot. So my school would end and I would walk across the parking lot and be able to go to practice. And yet I still felt in a lot of ways disconnected from my fellow coaches who both coached in the high school and from the kids, because I didn't see them walking in the hallways every day. And if practice got changed or something, it could just kind of get around the school word of mouth, but I was always the last person to get that information. I always found that to be really, really difficult. And then I think about guys who have head coaching jobs that aren't in the building, and I just think that there's got to be a ton of challenges. So when you were coaching at Hoban but still teaching at Highland, how was that experience different, more challenging than what you do now when you're in the building every day?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly was. And I had to make kind of an effort to, you know, hang around after practice, or, you know, pick up guys or give guys rides home and stuff like that to build those relationships a little bit more. It took a little longer, you know, from not having them in class. So it took a, you know, me, you know, my first year at Hoban, I really felt like I didn't really know the guys that well. But you know, after being there for a few seasons and, you know, showing up to all the team meals and all the chapels and things like that, and like I said, you know, picking guys up for summer league and giving them rides home after practice, guys that needed it. And, you got to work a little harder at it. That's for sure.
How do you go about thinking as a head coach about what you want your program to look like, for lack of a better way of saying it? I think whether you term it culture, whether you term it the pillars of your program, how did you figure out, or how do you continue to figure out and evolve what you want your program to stand for? And then how do you convey that message to the players?
So, I mean, like any other coach, I, you know, watched really good coaches and stole from them. So, a lot of our pillars of our program, our standards, I got from TK at Hoban. You know, he's got a sign when you come out of the locker room that says represent Hoban with class. So the first thing I did when I got the head job at Highland was I got a sign made, basically a duplicate of that sign with Hornets instead of Knights on it, and it says, you know, represent Highland with class, and I hung that up in our locker room. Because, you know, the first thing that we were going to do is make sure we represented our community well and our school well. And then, you know, you look around and you, you see what good programs look like, and you see what they do, and, you try to emulate it, really. You know, basketball is, you know, there's only five guys out there. It's a fairly simple game. So, you know, take what, you know, look around and see what other coaches do. See what you like, see what fits your personality. And, you know, if I'm giving a message to any coaches that are listening, keep your standards really high, you know, whatever those are. You know, we like to say, like I said, represent Highland with class, be a great teammate and work hard and compete every day to get better. Those are the ones we stand by, and how do I convey it to players? We talk about it. We get the our seniors, our captains, or kind of our leaders of the team every year together to talk about what that means to them and how they're going to show it, right? That's kind of been our big thing is, it's okay to say these things and we've got the sign in the locker room, but how are you going to show that? How are you going to dictate that every day? And we'll give them some scenarios. Hey, we just lost by 7 points to a team that we should have beat. What do you look like after the game? What do you look like on the bus ride home? What are you saying? What does the next day of practice look like? And so we try to give them a little bit of that training to put them in position to kind of, lead our program. And we ask them what we want. That buy-in, we ask the kids, what kind of team do you want to have? What kind of what are we going to be about this year? And, when the kids establish it, too, I think the buy-in occurs even more.
I love that. I think that's so important, what you said about attaching behaviors to your standards, because I think a lot of times, and I've said this before, but I'm guilty of this sometimes, you have these things that you want kids to do, you want players to do, and you say it to them, but they really don't necessarily understand what representing with class, what does that look like? What does that mean? I mean, I hear it, but I don't necessarily know what behaviors that translates to. And I think that when you break it down and say, this is what it means when we're talking about playing with class or representing our school with class and giving them a scenario like you described, to me, that's something that has to go along with establishing what your standards or pillars are. If all you have are words on paper or even words that you speak, but there's no behaviors or actions attached to them, I think it becomes really difficult and confusing for a kid to understand, well, what does coach want from me? I don't really get it. I hear what he's saying, but I don't know how to put that into action in order to please him or to live up to that standard. And so I think by attaching behaviors to it, you make that a lot more clear.
Yeah. I never wanted it to be like on a t-shirt, and here, hey, here's this t-shirt. And then, what does that mean? Whatever the slogan de jour is, I was always like, the slogan on the t-shirt always kind of bothered me, I guess, early on. Now it's, put it on the t-shirt if you want, that's fine. but you gotta, live it. And you gotta live
the t-shirt, not just read the t-shirt.
Yeah, you gotta
right?
live it. And you have to, give the kids some training in it and say, let's work through some scenarios here. Let's be prepared for the, bad things that could happen during our season. And can we live our standards when we aren't winning, when we're on a 3-game losing streak? It's easy to keep your standards high, when you're undefeated and everything's going well. But can you live that stuff when there's some adversity?
Yeah, it's so true. I think we had Anthony Kamara. I think he's the one who said this. He's an assistant coach at University of Alabama Huntsville, and he said something. And this more was talking about recruiting, but I think it sort of plays in here. He said, you want to have guys on your team that you can lose with. And I think, clearly as a college coach, you have more control over that from a recruiting standpoint versus being at a public school, you get who you get. But part of your job as a coach is clearly to mold kids into what you want them to be if they're going to be part of your program. And so I think what you just said in terms of it's easy to do when you're winning, it's easy to sell culture, it's easy to sell all these other things. But ultimately, that sales job becomes much, much harder if you're not winning games. And yet, the reality is that all those other things that go beyond the X's and O's that we're talking about right now, those things should stay present and stay part of your program regardless of what the one loss record is. And we all know that's way, way harder to do than it is to say. But I think that's what we have to set out to do as coaches, is that has to be our goal, that regardless of whether our team goes 20-0 or our team goes 0-20, the experience for those kids and the way that we are shouldn't change as a result of our record. The people we are shouldn't necessarily be reflected off of what our record is as a basketball team.
Yeah. You can't let the win-loss record define you. It's got to be bigger than that for sure.
All right. So I want to shift gears a little bit and talk to you about, you have young kids. And I think one of the things that you hear coaches talk about a lot is the struggle with the amount of time that you have to put in order to be successful. And so just as someone who's a husband and a father of young kids and a high school basketball coach, just talk a little bit about your experience from that perspective and how you go about making sure that you're able to give your best to both your family and to your job as a basketball coach, and just maybe give people an idea of how difficult that is, or maybe it's easy, I don't know, but just give us an idea of what that's like for you to balance all that.
It's a challenge. I always like to refer back to, my son was born, Will was born in 2015. So in April, I kind of took over, the Highland basketball program. And then the head coach had stepped down and, you know, it was getting to be kind of springtime and we needed to start having open gyms and stuff. So I just volunteered. I didn't know if I would get the job. I would just said, you know, hey, I'll kind of take over, and do what needs to be done. If I get hired, great. If I don't, you know, so be it. But I'm going to do what's right by Highland kids here. And, anyway, so, Will had been born that previous January. So I that was my second full-time job. So I was a full-time high school teacher. And then I was a dad all of a sudden. So now I got another full-time job. And then I became the head coach officially in June. So that's when I picked up my third full-time job. So I went from one to three full-time jobs in a matter of a few months there. But yeah, it takes some real effort. It takes some, a family calendar that has all of dad's basketball events on there, but also has the family events on there too. And making sure that, I work out the schedule. Luckily, you know, we have enough gyms and flexibility that I can make sure that I can still coach the T-ball team. And we work out some dad and daughter days. Elin, my daughter, is three. The pandemic, it was really bad for a lot of people, but, my family was in a fortunate situation where I got to be home and spend a lot of time with my kids, and my wife, and I didn't have a lot of basketball responsibilities. And I was teaching online. So that was kind of a welcome thing, but yeah, I mean, it takes planning. It takes a wife. My wife Bridget was a really good athlete, so she understands what goes into it. If you want to be a good head coach, she's also a teacher too, so she understands that aspect. But you've got to manage it, and you've got to make your family a part of it. Will is just to the age where he's going to play. I think he's going to try to play in our first, second, and third grade league. This winter time, I've been taking him with me on Saturday mornings. He hasn't played in any games yet. He just kind of hangs out and, hangs out with our guys and stuff. But, you gotta incorporate your family, make it part. To add to it, I live about 30 minutes from Highland High School. We don't live in the district. We live in Greene. So, that makes it a little more challenging. It would be kind of cool if we lived in the district. That might be a decision that we have to make here sooner or later. But
the 2 minute commute versus the 30 minute commute makes a difference for sure.
Yeah. And, it would be pretty cool to have my kids at the elementary school and, be able to pick them up and that kind of stuff. So, the way our schedule worked out, I got to, my wife and I were both there to take Will to his first day at kindergarten. So that was good, but yeah, it takes just like anything else. It takes time management. It takes commitment to, doing it right both ways. I certainly can't, do right. Put in all the time and effort and tell my, players about responsibility and then not do my responsibilities as a dad and a husband. So, you got to live it.
Yeah, no question. I think you have to. And they always say that, they don't hear what you say when they're watching what you do. And as a coach, I think that's one of the things that you really have to make sure that you're doing, that whatever standard you're holding your players to or your assistant coaches to, that you as the head coach have to live those things every single day and be the role model for what you want to see in your program. And when you do that, it gets a lot easier to get everybody to buy into what it is that you're trying to do. So to go along with that, just want to ask you a couple questions about how you go about spending your time planning practices and watching film. So kind of goes piggybacks off the last question. How do you build those things into, like, during the season, how do you build in your time to plan practice and to watch film? Are you doing that late at night when people are going to bed? Are you doing that during planning time at school? How do you carve out the time, and what's your process for watching film and planning practices?
Yeah, so if we're thinking about watching films, I usually try to watch at least two films on every team that we play. I kind of make the time. If I've got to get to school early to watch film, I like to, you know, get in early, whether to be, you know, kind of plan my classes for the day or watch film or, you know, practice plan. I do that. Our schedule has worked out too, where I have some time, our high school schedule, where I do have some time during the day to get things, you know, get things accomplished basketball wise, if necessary. They've helped me out with the, you know, that last period as my planning period as well. So that's in there. But yeah, there's definitely the late nights, and I'm fairly meticulous about the practice plan, as far as, you know, I like to have it, you know, typed out and ready to go, and, you know, with some reflection on, you know, how we played and what we need to get better at, and you know, what we need to do. I think that's a balance, you know, for coaches. How much do you worry about yourself and getting better or getting really good at what you're good at, and how much do you worry about the opponent? I've found that you know, probably more concentration on us and a little less on the opponent than what I started out as.
Yeah, I could see that. I think that's one of the things that it's clear that knowing, and it's interesting too, because you mentioned back when you were talking about being at Akron and you talked about the big stack of VCRs and VHS tapes, and clearly watching film has become a lot easier. But what we found talking to coaches is that just, it doesn't really necessarily save them time, because instead of watching 2 hours of one VHS tape where they're having to rewind and overshoot and replay 5 minutes here because they went too far and all that kind of thing, instead, because you can be so efficient with huddle, it just makes it where coaches are now watching 3-game films or 4-game films in the same time that they used to watch 1 or 2, just because it can be so much more efficient. And I think that's, again, those are all things that I think when you're talking about the parents of a high school basketball player, they don't necessarily see all those things that the coach is putting time in on when it comes to film study, when it comes to practice planning. I don't think, it kind of goes back to what we talked about, getting behind the curtain of a Division I college basketball program. There's just a lot of things that you take for granted that you don't see, that the average person sitting in the bleachers at a high school game has no idea what it is that you're doing and how you're going about carving out time to do those things.
Yeah, you know, it's what we signed up for. I mean, I'm certainly not going to complain about it. I would probably be watching, you know, film and breaking down film and looking at offenses and defenses and stuff, even if I wasn't a coach, because I like it. And I'm interested in the game and what people are doing. But yeah.
Where do you go to pick stuff up? Like what sources are you watching? College games and trying to pick stuff up? Are you watching NBA games? Where are you going to pick up new things that you might want to add to what you do?
Everywhere, really. I mean, you know, I love the NBA game just because it's basketball at the highest level. But I mean, our guys aren't like NBA guys. So yeah, I watch that for fun and because it's great basketball. Occasionally you see a set or something that's really good and you're like, yeah, that's, you know, we use those similar actions, so we could throw that wrinkle in.
You mean your guys can't walk 5 steps and not get called for a travel?
Yeah, those are interesting. I like the basketball breakdown where he talks about they get Ronnie Nunn on there. They talk about the zero step and when you gather and.
Yeah, that guy does a really good job.
Yeah, they've really kind of defined that, you know, travel or not kind of rule. Our guys take up a little less space than the NBA players and aren't quite as athletic and don't shoot it with quite the range that some of those guys do. but So, yeah, I mean, you get it from college games. I like watching, you know, a huddle is great because I'll just request film from teams that, you know, we don't play, but I just think are really good programs, and just see what they're doing. And, you know, what can we emulate from them? And, you know, and teams that are like, you know, similar to us, have similar style. What are some stuff that they're using? What are some wrinkles that they're throwing in? And, you know, we try to beg, borrow and steal all those when we can. So
how much do you change out what you do year to year based on your personnel? So obviously you have a core philosophy that you believe in, but then how much around the fringes are you changing out based on the kind of team you have and the kind of personnel you have?
You know, I don't know what the percentage would be, and it just depends. I mean, I've gone back and forth about, you know, kind of more structured offense, more freedom, you know, what makes sense for us, you know, what fits with kind of that games-based approach too. And in decision making, we're big on decision making, but I actually think more structure is kind of good for us. And then, you know, get really good at decision making, but don't have quite so many decisions when the ball gets in your hand. So that's kind of our focus. So we always have, you know, the basis of what we do on the defensive end, you know, with the man-to-man pressure defense. And then we tweak it from there based on the personnel. And then I think the same thing offensively. You know, we're going to go back to the ball screen, the Euro ball screen motion that we've gotten away from. And I think that's something we're going to kind of consistently stick with, and we'll just tweak it. We'll just tweak it based on our personnel. Maybe we have more shooters. Maybe we have more downhill attack guys. Maybe we have more guys that can, you know, score it around the rim. But yeah, we'll. I think once you have the system and the structure, then you can kind of, you know, start fitting the pieces together and put guys in position to be real successful.
Talk to me a little bit about, you mentioned the games-based approach. Just talk to me a little bit about how you incorporate those small-sided games into your practices to help your players with decision making.
We've really gone to, and listen, I was the old school guy that was, you know, doing zigzags and, you know, token defense and, you know, trying to shoot. We had a 10,000 shot thing where we would challenge kids to shoot 10,000 shots, you know, by themselves against air in the off season. You know, that was like the minimum requirement. And then I started watching all of Chris Oliver stuff and others, and, you know, realized that, you know, all the research and the education, and I should have known this as a teacher, has said, you know, the best way to get better at basketball is play basketball, you know, game-like with defense. So we try to put defense in whenever we can to any drills, shooting drills, passing drills, whatever. You know, we try to make it 2-on-2, 3-on-3, or, you know, give the offensive advantage, give a defense the advantage. You know, we'll break down the, you know, parts of our offense into 2-on-2 and 3-on-3 scenarios. You know, we'll work on ball screen coverages with 2-on-2 or 3-on-3, or, you know, guarding, you know, cross screen, down screen. And we'll just build it up, into eventually 5-on-5. But, you know, like I'll tell the guys, like, well, okay, here's a new set that we're going to put in. Let's walk through it, you know, two times. And, I'll be like, guys, listen, it'll be better when we get the defense out there, because then you'll see, you know, where the defense is at, how you have to react, you know, what to do when they're overplaying you. You know, I know it feels clunky doing it on air. And like I said, we used to be a big, you know, 5-on-0, go through all your sets a million times, you know, and I've gotten completely away from that. So, yeah, whatever coaches, you know, if I could give any of my advice, would be, you know, put a defender in there. If you're doing three man weave, put two defenders out there and make it better and make it more game like.
Yeah, I know I've done that myself over the course of time coaching my own kids' teams, and I've gone more and more and more every year. It feels like I get less and less of the on air drills, less and less of the just, we're going up and down the floor and working on fundamentals and sort of that old block practice. And instead you're trying to incorporate situational play and advantage, disadvantage, and all those things. And I think your players get more out of it. So yeah. I want to ask you one final question here, Adam, as we head towards wrapping things up. And that is, I've kind of been finishing with this question in the podcast, because I think it's a great way to end, a great way to kind of sum up what you're all about as a coach. And the question is, when you look forward as the head coach at Highland High School, what is your biggest challenge that you see moving forward? And then what's your biggest joy about being a high school basketball coach, getting you up out of bed in the morning? What do you look forward to every single day?
First of all, Mike, thanks for having me. when you invited me on the podcast and I started, kind of exploring what you're doing and seeing the college coaches and some of the heavy hitters you have on, I'm like, wow, this guy wants to talk to me. Wow, what I don't, I must.
Well,
it's been
great, man. We appreciate it.
Maybe I won a drawing or something. He was pulling names. He had a slow week. So thanks for having me. It's been really cool talking to you guys. My biggest challenge, I don't know. We're a public school. We don't have open enrollment. We coach the guys that we get. That's a challenge when you think of like winning a state championship, which is what everybody wants to do, right? That's the ultimate thing as a high school coach and player. That's a big challenge, but it's also really fun to be part of the community and be a teacher, in the district and get to go know guys from second or third grade on and have their, siblings. A kid that I coached, my second year at Highland coaching, his son is coming up and is in our middle school program right now. So it's going to be my first father son, which means I'm getting old, I guess.
Exactly.
So, I guess what I look the most forward to is all the, all the great relationships that continue to grow and getting to keep pushing Highland basketball to get better. I go back to, when I was hoping to get the job and my focus kind of was, I'm just going to help these Highland kids get better at basketball the best I can. So that's continues to be kind of, when you have a rough week or whatever, and maybe you have two road trips and they don't go so well, and I just kind of always reflect back on, just help Highland kids get better at basketball, and have good relationships with them and treat them the right way. That everything seems to work out okay. So far so good. We're going to stay on that path. I still love coaching. I don't see any end in sight. It's fun being part of the game. It's fun, talking to you and hopefully helping out some other coaches. And if anybody wants to, reach out to me, I'm just at Adam Sestaro on social media, mostly Twitter. I actually kind of try to stay off social media too much because, there are some downsides to it. And it is a distraction when you have kids and try to coach and teach. I'll jump on there if I see someone send me a direct message and definitely try to help out a fellow coach. I've got a YouTube channel, Sestaro Basketball, where I try to post some stuff that I think is helpful for coaches. And I'm part of the basketball mastermind group with Chris Oliver. If anybody, that's a really cool thing to be a part of. I know you're doing some mentoring stuff.
Yeah, so we're going to get that started hopefully soon. Maybe by the time this episode is aired, we'll have that up and running. So hopefully you'll be able to check that out for sure.
Yeah, I enjoy being part of the coaching community. I've tried to help out with the State Coaches Association and our Greater Akron Association. So I appreciate coaches. Coaches have been, a big part of my life. And I try to, I just try to give back as a coach and hopefully provide some of the same, some of the same growth for kids. So
absolutely. Adam, we cannot thank you enough for jumping out with us and spending almost an hour and a half tonight to share your story and just give out things that some of our coaches out there that are part of our audience can benefit from. And we really, really appreciate, as a local guy here in the Cleveland area, we're always excited to have those coaches on that we are geographically close to. And
yeah,
again, I don't, you definitely didn't win a drawing. We were excited to have you on and be able to learn from your story. And I certainly feel like we did that. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. If you have an existing podcast or are looking to launch your own pod but aren't sure where to start, the team at My Podcast Manager can help. Our podcast team works behind the scenes so you can do what you do best. We'll help you launch your podcast, make it sound great, and free up your time for the more enjoyable parts of podcasting. If you're ready to put your podcast editing, production, and promotion on autopilot with a trusted team of podcasting professionals, visit mypodcastmanager.com to get started.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.